Here at Jewish Rock Radio, we care about the meaning and the action behind Jewish music. Every week on Jewish Rock Radio, we feature a series of provocative shows hosted by top artists in Jewish life, dedicated to enriching your knowledge about Jewish artists, their music, and the impact they're having on our world today. Up next on Jewish Rock Radio, join host Charlie Kramer on JRR Artist Feature, where he talks one-on-one with Jewish artists about the deeper inner workings of their artistry, writing, connection to Judaism, spirituality, and so much more. You're listening to Jewish Rock Radio and JRR Artist Feature with Charlie Kramer.
Hey everyone, welcome to Artist Feature. My name is Charlie Kramer, and we are lucky to be here with my good friend, Jacob Spike Krause. What's up, Jacob?
What's up? Hey everyone.
Nice to have Spike on the show. I call him Spike. Is that chill?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
So I get that question all the time, and everyone's always asking me, do you want to be called Jacob? Do you want to be called Spike? And it doesn't so much matter to me. I often find that Spike is more memorable. And so if I'm going to a new place for the first time and I really don't want them to forget who I am, I'm going to go by Spike so that, you know, they're like, oh, that's that guy with the crazy name that I'm never going to forget. And it's a lasting impression.
Yeah, in my phone, you're Spike. There's no Jacob. There's no Krause. It's just Spike.
Oh, it's like Sting or Cher.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think it's an
Bono.
It's kind of cool to have a name like that. My full name is Charles.
Yeah,
but I never go by Charles ever. Only my sister.
I call you Charles.
That's
sometimes.
True. You do actually. My sister also calls me Charles. If you're listening, hi Samantha. well, it's nice to
shout outs.
It's nice to have Spike here on the show, and we're gonna dive into some of his music. We're just gonna learn a little bit about him. So let's jump in. Where are you from? Where are you calling from right now? We're over FaceTime.
Yes. Well, I live currently in New York City in Manhattan on the Upper East Side.
Wow,
so that's
nice.
Where I'm calling from. It is frigid.
How cold is it there?
It's not as bad as it was the last few days. I think today it was probably around freezing, around 32. Maybe a tad above, maybe 34, but it was a tidbit yeah. Nipply, as we say.
My goodness. Well, I'm calling from LA. I live in the heart of Hollywood, and it was 71 degrees today.
Yeah, you wore a t-shirt today.
I'm actually wearing a t-shirt and shorts right now. And I know people can hate me for that, and I invite it. I think it's amazing. I love where I'm from, but I am jealous. I love New York. I'm a huge Yankees fan. You're not originally from New York, though, correct?
No, sir. No, I am not. I am originally from Boston, Massachusetts. And the reason I'm laughing is because that's about as far away from New York sports fandom as you can get.
Right.
We have rivalries in almost every major sport in the country.
Yeah.
And Boston has been doing pretty well for ourselves in sports over the last couple of decades.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. I remember receiving some texts from you during the playoffs this year when the Yankees and the Red Sox were going at it. That was not fun. But, you know, congrats.
I tried to limit myself.
You did a nice job.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
World champs, baby.
It was awesome. Yeah, you guys had an amazing team. Well, so you live in New York now. Do you work at a synagogue out there? Like, what's your life? And you're traveling?
Yeah, so I no longer work at a synagogue. Wow. I am the music teacher and tefillah coordinator, I guess you call it, musical tefillah educator, at a Jewish day school in Manhattan. That's Beit Rabban Day School, which is a non-affiliated, non-denominational day school. It's a preschool and an elementary school. It's small. It's only about 120 kids. And I'm there a few days a week doing tefillah, teaching music. And that's what you would call my day job. And then I travel on the weekends. And almost every weekend now, I am flying or driving or taking a bus or a train somewhere to lead services or teach a workshop or perform, do a concert of original music. It takes me all over the world. It brings me to see a lot of new people, a lot of different communities, and I really love it. Like, I was in Phoenix this past weekend. I actually flew back on the red eye.
Wow.
So I got a little bit of warm weather for a little bit, but I was spending the weekend with Nifty Southwest, which is a Nifty region that I have built up a really strong relationship with over the last 3 to 4 years. And I've seen some tremendous growth from them. And it's been really great to kind of, you know, start to build that family mm-hmm. and that community over on the West Coast.
Yeah. You're definitely, I think when I think of you, I think of like two separate sides. I think of this like incredible songwriter with a very unique voice. I like to call Spike the Jason Mraz of Jewish rock.
That might be generous. It might be generous.
Well, I was just saying, like, stylistically, we'll get to hear in a second when we listen to some music, but your voice is very pop-like, and so is your writing. And then you're also come from this background of URJ camp song leading. which, you know, is a background that I come from as well. So when you're traveling, you know, I'm sure there's like the crossover. You're the certain times you're going and you're being the artist and you're the writer and the performer, and other times you're going and you're doing a little bit more of the songwriter training and song leading. And then I'm sure there's also times when it's both, which is really amazing that you can offer all those different things.
Yeah. I mean, kind of growing up as a song leader and learning how to really, what does it mean to be a song leader and to be, you know, a spiritual leader and a community builder and an educator in that sense, you learn really quickly about this concept of simsum and what does it mean to kind of pull yourself out of a space to make room for the community to fill the space, which is not something that a rock star usually does. And so we have this big, you know, movement about how song leaders are not rock stars. And it's important to kind of make sure that you're really being a community builder first and not a performer. And there are opportunities where you can kind of bring both of those aspects to really enhance time spent with a community. And yeah, it's been a treat to be able to go to a place for, you know, maybe a weekend, a full weekend, to take on both roles and to really be able to be a spiritual leader for Shabbat and a community builder, but to also have an opportunity to perform and to share music that I've written that feels like a gift almost that I'm hoping to offer to the world and that I hope people will accept and appreciate and really engage with and think about. So those are probably my favorite moments.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's such a tough balance between what you're talking about, right? And it's interesting, yeah. Like it's almost like a new learning cycle when you're going through that of trying to figure out how you can fill both roles while also, you know, giving what it was, simsum, is what you said?
Yeah, simsum. Mm-hmm.
What's the actual, do you know the actual definition of that?
I don't know the textbook definition of it, but it's essentially like the withdrawing,
okay, cool,
of stuff, right? The creation of space.
Okay. Oh, there you almost. Go. Cool. I love that. The creation of space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Space is an important thing, and giving people the opportunity to shine their light is amazing. It's something that I know you do so well. So I want to go back in time a little bit.
All right.
I want to hear about Spike when he was Lil Spike. Where'd you get the name Spike, by the way?
Yeah. So that's a summer camp nickname. I grew up at the URJ Joseph Eisner Camp Institute for Living Judaism in Great Barrington, Massachusetts.
My goodness, that's a long name. I didn't know they had that
long
name.
Oh yeah, Joseph Eisner Camp Institute.
Oh yeah,
for Living Judaism. So I grew up there. I started going when I was 7 or 8, and stayed there for about 13 or 14 summers consecutively. I was a camper there, and then I was a staff member and a song leader, and then eventually the head song leader, and able to kind of craft and lead that program. And I got the nickname Spike in about 6th grade when I started spiking up my hair, almost like a surfer. I actually had a whole like surfer phase. I was wearing Hawaiian shirts, and I was putting in the gel and spiking up the hair. I used LA Looks. I don't remember which number it was. But I had never surfed. I have never surfed. I was living in Boston, so it wasn't like surf capital of the world. But I had this whole aesthetic, and people started calling me Spike, I remember, my cabin mates. And it just kind of stuck. And then a couple years later, when I was entering high school and ready for something new, I think I shaved my head, not fully, but like a buzz cut, mm-hmm. Just like something very summery. And I showed up to camp that summer and was like, I guess you can't call me Spike anymore. And everyone was like, ha-ha, we are definitely still gonna call you Spike. You can't get out of it. And it has basically stuck ever since.
So how did that evolve when you started song leading? Were you always song leading and people knowing you as Spike? Or was there ever a time where you'd be in one community at like a temple, like the temple you grew up at, and they were calling you Jacob, and then you'd go to camp and song lead and they call you Spike?
Yeah, so that happens all the time.
Wow.
Because I was really only Spike at summer camp and in Nifty, and I was Jacob everywhere else. And it was, yeah, you know, it's hard to explain. Ultimately, I think I grew to the point where when I'm song leading, it's almost like an out-of-body experience where I go into a zone almost, and Spike and Jacob kind of merge. And I don't approach that so much in the concept of either being a Spike or a Jacob. It's you know, my song leading just kind of, you know, I go on autopilot and it comes out of me. It comes, I think, from a holy place. In a spiritual place, I started learning to song lead at Eisner. So I definitely mm-hmm. started as a Spike, which I think allowed me in those communities where I was Jacob to still get into that autopilot zone and to still really feel confident and comfortable pulling some of Spike out of the other world and kind of allowing it to filter into my Jacob world. I don't know if I had never had summer camp, if I had never been Spike, I don't think I would have taken to song leading in Jewish music the same way that I have. Mm-hmm. And I honestly don't know if I would have brought that song leading into the other world, right? Like if I had been Jacob all over in every aspect of my life, I don't know if I would have ever gained the full confidence and kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like not caring to put myself up in front of a crowd and offer something and try and bring people together and to really be a shaliach, a messenger for the people that I'm around, either as a performer or as a song leader and a spiritual leader. I mean, I did theater in middle school, but by that time I had already started going to camp. So it really was Spike, I think, that gave me some of this, I want to say bravado or gusto, like the ability to kind of say, I'm going to put myself out in front of this large group of people and it's going to go well or it's not going to go well, but I'm going to love doing it and I'm just going to kind of express myself that way.
Just before we head into our first song, everyone, we do a little rapid fire. I'm excited about this one.
I'm ready.
All right.
I'm so ready for the rapid fire.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay, here we go. Let's go.
Bring them on. Bring them on.
Let's go. Here we go. Spike?
Yes.
Dijon or yellow mustard?
Oh, can I throw a curveball at you?
No. Yes. Well, yes, you can.
Yes. Great. Honey mustard.
Oh, wow. I thought you were going to say, like, it depends on the item that I was using. Or
no,
like
no,
that.
No. I'm going to say honey mustard. And I'm going to go one step further. I'm going to say honey Dijon. I want that sweet and that spicy together. That marriage is so delicious. That's... Honey Dijon, without a doubt, is my go-to of all sauces.
I'm glad you threw the curveball because I agree. All right. Elton John or Billy Joel?
Billy Joel, hands down.
Wow.
I've seen Billy Joel 3 or 4 times, and his songwriting style really, really resonates with me and has inspired me. I actually saw both of them. I saw when they played head-to-head several years back, and that was a really amazing concert. And Elton John is an amazing songwriter and performer and singer. I actually don't know that he writes most of his songs, but Billy Joel has always had a really deep place in my heart. I'm sure for you too, coming from New York, that you appreciate a little bit of Billy Joel, but his I think that what he did for pop music and rock music by pulling in elements of classical piano and classical songwriting is actually really, really profound.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I have to say Billy Joel.
Love it. All right. Favorite album all time.
Oh wow. My favorite album of all time is Continuum by John Mayer.
Oh, I think we might have the same favorite album. That was my soundtrack.
Fantastic.
It's just so good. What's your favorite song on
the
record?
It's so good. It's like hit after hit after hit. Probably Stop This Train.
Oh, wow. That's such a good song.
Which is just a gorgeous. And that song actually taught me how to palm mute and finger pick in a very specific style.
Yeah.
He's
the best.
What a talent and a gift.
Yeah, he's coming to LA again in the summer. I think I'm going to go. Go to snack.
Can I say Sour Patch Kids? Yeah, do those count as a snack?
Yeah,
great. Sour Patch Kids.
Watermelon or regular?
No, regular for sure. I have nothing against watermelon, but
that's good to know.
I'm a classic kind of a guy.
Yeah.
I actually buy them in like the 5-pound bags, like the industrial size that they're only really sell them out to candy stores that put them in like those clear, you know, those clear like containers where you put in the spoon and you can like fill up a bag in the grocery store with different candies and they charge you like by the pound.
Yeah.
So they fill all those with these giant industrial sized bags of all the different candies and you're not supposed to buy them wholesale, but you can because I found them. And we'll buy Sour Patch Kids 5 pounds at a time. And it gives my dentist a lot of work.
It's amazing. I actually end up, when I was growing up, I used to have a store like that, like a candy shop that was right next to the movie theater that I go to, like in middle school and high school. And I'd religiously go and pack a huge bag of all this candy. And then, you know what you got to do when you go to the movie theater? You slip it into your pocket of your jacket.
You sneak it in.
And you sneak it in. And it was the best. I love those things.
And they definitely know that everyone is sneaking in candy, but they also recognize that their prices are exorbitant at the movie theater. And so they let you get away with it. I often find that when I go and fill up those bags, I think that I'm being reasonable.
You never are.
And I go into the candy store. I'm like, okay, this time I'm only going to to fill it up like halfway, a quarter of the way. Yeah, no. Like, I'm an adult now. I'm 27 years old. Let me just kind of fill it up a little bit and be conservative. And then I look down and it's like almost all the way full. And the candy store clerk is charging me like $15 for a bag of candy.
It's amazing.
Every time.
All right. Well, that concludes our rapid fire. But let's...
That was great.
I love rapid fire so much. Okay, here we go. This is our first song by Spike. This is going to be Pete Hu Lee by Jacob Spike Krause on JRR Artist Feature right here on Jewish Rock Radio, the official home of Jewish rock.
I just had to tell you when I was lost, I found you as a refuge. So let me in because I just want to be close to you. Today is the day to so live it up, up, up and away.
Can't get enough Jewish rock? Visit us online at jewishrockradio.com. Jewish Rock Radio is listener supported. We count on your support to provide the ultimate in Jewish rock. Visit www.jewishrockradio.com/support and pledge your support today.
Welcome back, everyone, to JRR Artist Feature right here on Jewish Rock Radio.
Yes!
That was...
yes!
That was Spike, and you also heard Spike, Jacob Spike Krause. That was Pete Hu Lee. Great song, man. You just released that how long ago? So has it been like a year?
It's been a year, yeah. That came out last spring.
It's a beautiful song.
Sorry, it's been almost 2 years.
Really?
I think so. I'm pretty sure that came out in 2017.
Wow.
In the spring of 2017. So it's been about a year and a half. Can I tell you my favorite part of that entire song?
Yeah, please.
Which might be surprising based on just like the arrangement and production style of that tune. But if you listen really closely, at the end of what I would call the bridge, I guess, the na-na section that's doubled. Uh-huh. The second time through, there's a grand piano that's playing octaves.
I was going to ask you about the octaves.
Absolutely.
Because it sounded like it was your voice.
No, so it was... What? Yeah, so it's actually a grand piano. So there's... Absolutely. So there's all these, you know, synthesizers and electronic instruments and things like that. And then there's just this acoustic grand piano the second time through the na-na that's playing... Ba, 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 ba. It gets me every time.
That's awesome.
Like, feels Titanic
I think
to me.
It's so important for people that are out there that are artists to never feel bad about enjoying your own music. It's actually an amazing thing, right? You should love the music that you create. You should want to dance to it. You should want to show it to people, be excited about it because it's your art. It's your passion. It's your voice. I think it's so cool. Thank you for just diving in and showing us that part right there.
Absolutely.
I was going to ask, but it's even cooler that you just went for it yourself.
Yeah, well, that's
so important.
You know, it stands out to me every time that I listen to it. And it's cool because it's something that I didn't add. So this is just like a little shout out to collaboration and working with artists, producers, songwriters, whoever is, I can come with a song and I really liked the song when I wrote it. But to have, you know, the producing team that I work with, shout out Buzz Brothers Productions, Mark Nemec and Nathan Meckel, to come in and say, what if we take the piano here and just play these octaves and then we'll go back and forth and kind of figure out exactly what notes they should be. But to have new creative minds just come and add to something that you've kind of already started to create feels really special and really cool. And I love that.
Yeah. So I think of we didn't talk about this before, but you went to school for songwriting, correct?
Ish. I took a few songwriting classes. I went to school for vocal performance. I'm actually classically trained. Which is surprising because it's not really the way that I sing. I studied opera and like Broadway. What I did gain from getting a degree in vocal performance was the proper way to sing, to support your voice, to keep it healthy, and to fill with the right resonance, and to sing from the right place. I don't carry so much of that vibrato and the stylistic pieces of what I learned. I don't bring that with me as much, but it's certainly helped to maintain pitch and to keep my voice in a healthier place than it was when I was in high school and younger.
Absolutely. I think it's so important. I mean, I was just going to ask you, because I know you love songwriting so much.
Yes.
And
yes, it's so
this
fun.
Next segment that we just entered, I want to talk to you about your spiritual journey. And specifically with you, I want to ask you about how songwriting and God and songwriting and spirituality, you know, are interwoven for you or not. But I just have this feeling, and I'm curious to hear how you find the spiritual meaning of life within the times that you're creating in that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see you're throwing me the softballs, right? Just lob one right up the middle. That's maybe the most the most profound question anyone has ever asked me. Can you ask one more time? And I need to
yeah.
hear it again.
Okay, so I'm wondering what the connection for you is between finding spirituality and songwriting. Like the moments that you are writing, where do you find God? Or are you finding God in those moments? Or is it something different? Because I know how much you love songwriting. So I'm curious to hear of that connection.
Okay. Where should I start? I do. I really love songwriting and the craft of songwriting. And it feels almost like a logic puzzle to me. And thinking about all the different ways we can use that tool. And I dislike writing the same song in the same way over and over and over again. I think it gets stale. And songwriting for me has always been a way of, I guess, expressing. You'll be able to tell, audience at home, listeners at home, on your couch or in your car or in your headphones at the gym, wherever you are, that when I speak, it's not as smooth. It's not as smooth as my songs. And there's a lot of pausing, and it's mostly because I'm trying to think critically and intentionally about what I'm going to say and how I'm going to say it. Songwriting has never felt like that for me. It's always come a lot more naturally and a lot more, I guess, smoothly and poetically. And so I think that the times when I find God the most in songwriting is, there are probably two of them. One of them is when I find a hook or a melody that I think really matches a text that has already been written, and it just clicks for me. So actually, Pidhuli is a great example. So the words Pidhuli, right, means open up for me. Pidhu, open, li, for me. And it goes on to talk about, the text is open up for me, Pidhuli Sha'arei Tzedek, the gates of righteousness, Avovam, and I will go through them, Odeya, and I will praise God. And so for me, to write Pete Hooley, that ascending melody that ends up, boom, right here at the top of the range. And it's the highest point of the song, right? So the melodic peak of the song is the opening of the gates. Pete Hooley, and everything else around that on both sides builds up to that moment of the opening and of that kind of access to the divine, that access to God and to righteousness and to the way that we live our lives, being our best selves. So that those kind of moments where I find a melody or a hook that really, I think, sits well with the text. Mm-hmm. And the song we're going to talk about in a little bit also, I felt that way very strongly. And the other time where I really feel God strongly is when I write a lyric that sits with me in a very profound way. And it's one of those times where I don't really have an opinion about how other people are going to see it, right? It's like, if I write a lyric that clicks for me and I say, this yeah. is maybe one of the best lyrics I've ever written, and I don't totally care if other people like it or not because I'm keeping it in the song and it, you know, it has staying power for me. Those right. moments also, and I've had a couple of those over the years. I have a few in this song I wrote called Job, which we're not going to talk about today, but you can find it just by wherever you listen to music. That has a few of those lines that really stuck with me and felt philosophical, but also honest and personal and gut-wrenching. And in those moments, I think I also feel this connection to the divine. You know, I mentioned earlier about autopilot. There are some songs yeah. that just come out of you. And I'm curious to hear, Charlie, what you think and your process. I've had songs that have taken me several weeks to write, or even months if I've started something and it hasn't really clicked and I put it down and come back to it later. And I've had songs that get written in about 7 minutes from start to finish.
Yep.
And those songs appear essentially the way that they were at the end of those 7 minutes on the record. Because right. it just kind of, you know, autopilot. It's just, there are songs that come, they flow through you. And in those moments, you feel something, I think, bigger and larger, and that you're just a vessel and a conduit to kind of, oh, okay, so this needs to come into the universe right now. And I am lucky enough and grateful enough to be the one to put it on paper yeah. right now.
This one's pretty straightforward. I just want to hear what your belief in God is. What is God to you? Who is God? Where do you find God? You know, we learned a little bit about where you find God when you're songwriting, but I'm curious to hear of the other places and the other connections you have.
Mm-hmm. I think the truth is I don't know. It's one of those subjects that feels kind of too weighty and effervescent for me. I hope that was the right use of the word effervescent. I'm not positive that it was, but it felt right, so I said it. I hold a fairly traditional concept of God. I think that there is a God. I think that God is genderless. Okay, maybe not super traditional.
Yeah, it's not very traditional.
So sorry. I made it through. There is a God. I think there is a God. I haven't really had any answers in my life to the big questions of, like, if there is a God, why is there evil? Does God intervene in the world or not? Mm. You know, what are our actions worth to get into heaven? Something actually that's been making me think a lot about this is the TV show The Good Place on NBC. Do you watch that?
I do.
Great show. For those of you who don't listen to it, just a brief synopsis so you know what I'm about to talk about, is basically the concept is all of your actions on earth have a point value equivalent in the positive or the negative. And there's a certain point threshold, and if you pass it, you get into heaven, which is the good place. And if you don't meet it, based on your actions on earth, then you go to the bad place, which is the bad place. TV,
this is a television show.
Right.
Just
on NBC.
For anyone who just started listening, we're talking about a TV show.
Yes.
To compare.
It's called The Good Place. It's a sitcom. It's a comedy. It really is funny, but asks a lot of...
It is a good show.
Thought-provoking questions. I actually wrote a Yom Kippur activity based on one of the Good Place episodes, which was really fun.
Wow.
And it has started to get me to think about, you know, my actions and my responsibility as a human on earth to the rest of the people that are here with me. In terms of God, I think I'm still searching. I'm still looking for answers. I know that there is a God, and I think that I believe firmly enough that God is more than just like a metaphorical idea or concept, that that it's not, I believe more, some people say like, oh, God is a spirit that floats through the trees, or God is in nature. And I think that I believe in a God that is a little bit more tangible than that. But that's about as far as I go. You know, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. and people would say, like, in Hebrew school, like, we draw what you think God is, and I would immediately, it would be like, I could I could still picture it right now. I could probably draw it for you if you wanted, but it's basically, in fact, I'm going to do that right now, and I'm going to show Charlie, and Charlie's the only one that's going to be able to see it. but I would draw this God that had a really long face, almost like a Simpsons character, but but he would, or God, who I thought was a he at that time, because he had a beard, but it was like stubbly beard. It was like God with 5 o'clock shadow. It wasn't like grown beard. It was like stubble. And so this God, right, this actually looks pretty scary, would also be wearing a bandana. That's what I remember about it. And so God was potentially a pirate. And that, I think, was this, yeah.
All right, here we go. I'm seeing it. I'm going to describe it for you. There's a man with no mustache, but a full beard on the bottom, and some sort of, is that the bandana on top?
Yeah, I didn't do a very good job.
So the bandana's being, yeah, the bandana, if you didn't say he's wearing a bandana before you showed me the picture,
right.
I would have said man with a swoopy parted hair style in the front with a very short ponytail sticking out the back.
Exactly.
But I'm real. That's a bandana. So it's interesting. I've never had an image of God like that before.
Yeah, that was the image of God that I had probably for the longest part of my childhood growing up, and it wasn't...
So when did it change?
I don't know that I could pinpoint an exact moment. Just getting older and being introduced to more cultures and more communities, people mm-hmm. even within the Jewish community that had different concepts of God than I did. Also, I think that I had to start to understand more grandiose concepts, just like in my intellectual development. So
yeah.
I think that, you know, as a Hebrew school student in elementary school, it would be tough for me to imagine what a genderless God would look like, right? That God is not really man or a woman. And that was something that it took me a little bit longer to understand before it made sense that that's probably the case.
Right.
I would really love it if God was like Morgan Freeman's character from Bruce Almighty.
Yeah.
That would be great. I think that's probably my ideal God.
That's a great question. Like what is your ideal God? We might have to start asking people that on the show.
It's like a kind but firm parent.
Yeah.
Who's like
with a very nice voice.
Who's like, I'm gonna give you all this work and it's not gonna be easy and sucks for you, but I believe in you and you can do it and I'm not gonna help you.
I that's kind of, I've never talked about it on the show, but that's a lot of what my belief in God is, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, like someone who challenges us in a beautiful way to help us grow.
Mm-hmm. I actually have this text that sticks with me. I went to Jewish high school. I went to Jewish day school and high school at different schools in Boston. The school I went to in high school is called Gann Academy. It used to be called the New Jewish High School of Greater Boston, and we studied dual curriculum. So we had our English and our math and history, but we also had Talmud and Tanakh and conversational Hebrew. We prayed every day, and we studied a text, and I don't know that I could tell you the source of the text. It's somewhere in the Talmud. The text says, Adonai Tzadik Yivchan, which means God tests the righteous. And that's a really, really powerful idea and concept for me. And I've had conversations with other people about this who disagree with my interpretation, but for me, that idea is that God tests people, and the challenges that you face are because you're capable of overcoming them, right?
Yes.
The reason that you're tested is because you're righteous, right? And so you're not challenged. You don't face challenges in your life for no reason. You face challenges because you're capable of facing them and facing that adversity and overcoming it and becoming stronger for it.
Right. And I think an important little side note here is like, we are all creations of God.
Yeah.
And we all receive challenges, which in your definitions means we are all righteous people, right? And I think that that is something that we should always remember when we're receiving these challenges, is that we are righteous people, and that's why we are receiving them. I think it's beautiful. I love that, Spike. Yeah. We gotta start playing our next song.
Okay.
Which is an amazing thing to have to do. Pretty stoked. This is one of your songs. It's the first song off your first record.
Yes.
Shake Off the Dust.
Yes, this is...
It's called... You can... No, introduce your own song. All right. This is cool. Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Harani by Jacob Spike Krause, only on JRR, Jewish Rock Radio Podcasts, with host Charlie Kramer. I don't know what...
This is the best day of my life. Here we go. This is Harani. This is by Spike. Artist feature, Jewish Rock Radio. Here we go.
Harani, Mizame. Harani, Mizame. Amen.
can't get enough Jewish rock? Visit us online at jewishrockradio.com.
You know, you're not a real fan until you fan us on Facebook. Come on, let's be friends.
Jewish Rock Radio.
The official home of Jewish rock. Jewish Rock Radio.
What up, everyone? Welcome back to JRR Artist Feature. I'm Charlie Kramer, your host, and that was Harani by Jacob Spike Krause, and Jacob is right here with us. Spike, that's an amazing song. It's beautiful. It opens up your debut album.
Yes.
Shake Off the Dust.
Yeah.
Curious, why did you make it the opening song?
So many reasons. It was incredibly intentional to start the album that way. We'll start text-based, which is that text, which comes from the Sephardi rite, R-I-T-E, not R-I-G-H-T. Harani mezamen et pi. It comes at the beginning of the morning service, of the Shacharit service. With this, I prepare myself to thank, praise, and glorify my Creator. Right? It's a text that's supposed to get us in the mindset, hey, we're about to pray, and there's a turning point, right? It's not the very first thing. It's not Modeh Ani. It's not Matovu. But it comes in the beginning, before you jump into like the meat and potatoes, or tofu and potatoes for the vegetarians. Shout out, vegetarians. Before you jump into the intense piece of your prayer and your service, it's a turning point that says, okay, now I'm ready and I'm preparing myself and I'm stepping into, right? It's almost like stretching before going into the basketball game.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I felt very intentional and strongly that my album in its entirety felt like a prayer, like it was an offering. And to put this kind of pivotal piece at the beginning to say the rest of everything that's about to happen in the record, on the record, is a prayer, and it's music of thanks and praise, which it is as you go through the rest of that record, Shake Off the Dust. And putting that song there gave me the ability to almost preview the rest of what was to come. And so that was really intentional on my part. Production-wise and sonically, Shake Off the Dust was meant to be something new, something different. And I wanted to experiment with what does Jewish music sound like, songwriting-wise, but also production-wise. And had, this must have been... I mean, I had been writing this music for a while. The album came out in 2014. But when I wrote Harani, I had, or was thinking about the album and production and how, what I wanted to sound like, I had recently been exposed to Hide and Seek by Imogen Heap. I don't know if any of you know that song, but it's very vocoder heavy, which is the effect that you hear at the beginning of this track, where it's just me singing and I'm only singing one line, but it's run through a vocoder, which is a filter, a machine that expands all of those harmony notes are created around my voice based on the notes that I'm singing. So my one voice can turn into 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 voices, depending on how you program it, which is not a technique that I had really been exposed to in Jewish music. And I wanted right off the bat to say, this is different. This is something you've never heard before. I wanted to catch people's attention. And so to be able to start the album with nothing but a drone on the tonic, which is C, and then to be able to just bring in this vocal that was me, but it wasn't me. It was me and digital me. And tell people what you're about to hear is new, and it might make you uncomfortable, and that's a good thing. And I'm sorry that it makes you uncomfortable, and I hope that you're okay with it. And let's go on this journey together. And all of those decisions kind of made that song the clear number one choice. It uses a lot of techniques that I employed in my early songwriting, which is non-standard tunings on the guitar. I think that piece is written in open C, so it allows a lot more of a harmonic resonance and range with the guitar, because I'm playing a lot of open strings for most of the song, right? Because when you put your finger on a string of a guitar, it changes the pitch, but it also dampens how intensely the string can vibrate and resonate. So to write in non-standard tunings, where you're only putting on a couple of fingers, you're playing like non-standard chord shapes, leaves more strings free to vibrate and resonate, and builds a bigger sound, almost like a wall of sound. And so that was the way that I had gone about writing that song. And I don't usually play it like that in live performance, because it takes too long to tune down and then tune back up.
2 hours later.
Right? It's like that SpongeBob scene. But, you know, maybe yes, if I ever get to the point in my career where I'm lucky enough to be able to play more than one guitar at a show and have somebody that comes out and takes my guitar and, like, tunes it backstage and then brings it back out to me,
I'll be able to
play that song in that original tuning.
Man, so cool. Well, it's awesome to hear that because we get such good insight into your writing and your style of writing, and also how writing translates into recording, right? It's almost like you're writing another portion of the song, because once you write it on the instrument, it's a song. The production of the actual record and making it into something that then becomes a full-on recorded track is a whole nother writing process.
Absolutely. So, can I say something about this really quick?
Absolutely.
I believe so strongly in using the studio as an instrument in your music. Now, a lot of people feel that the best types of recordings are the ones that you can replicate live. And I have no issue with that opinion. And in fact, that's a really important and strong opinion, especially in Jewish music, because a lot of that music is being written with the intent of it being functional and replicable by people that are not you, right? Mm-hmm. Song leaders and cantors and educators and rabbis and cantorial soloists and lay leaders and people somewhere else being able to replicate what you've created. And there's such a value to that. I think it's really important. And you have an opportunity when you are in a studio to create something that is unique that you specifically might not be able to replicate elsewhere, which makes it special. And so I feel very strongly about including the synthesizers and the cool effects. And what you heard on Pete Hooley earlier in the podcast, there's a section out of the bridge where my voice is auto-tuned more than just like the typical, oh, he was a little bit flat on that note, but the way that somebody like T-Pain might use auto-tune. And to be able to create something like that in the studio, in my opinion, you know, it creates this special, unique art piece that, though it might not be replicable elsewhere, really mm-hmm. adds to the kavanah of what you're doing. And so I actually feel very strongly that approaching and treating the production of a track as part of the songwriting of the track is really the best way to create something spectacular.
It's like a whole another canvas. It's pretty amazing. So we're about to play the final song, Hide and Seek. And I wanted to, you know, the last song we try and take a little extra second on Artist Feature to explain it, to talk about it. And I just wanted to, you know, ask you where it came from and how you created it. And then, you know, we've been talking so much about the studio. I'd love to hear a little bit about where it started when you first wrote it and how it expanded in the experience of getting into the studio.
So Hide and Seek is a song that's based off of Yidid Nefesh, which is a piyut. And Yidid Nefesh is this text that basically puts our relationship with God into a lover's perspective. And it's this concept of being so deeply in love and sometimes having it reciprocated and sometimes it feels like it's not reciprocated. It's almost like a will they, won't they type deal. I'm going to read you a little bit of a translation, just a piece of it so that you have this, right? Show yourself, beloved, and cover me with the shelter of your peace. Light up the world with your presence that we may exult and rejoice in you. Hurry, loved one, the holy day has come. Show us grace as long ago, right? It uses these beautiful poetic phrases, heart's delight, world's light, shining glory, right? My heart is weak. My heart is sick for love of you. Like, I'm so in love with you that I'm physically ill. Like, heal me, like, love me, show yourself to me. And when I read that in Hebrew and in English, it felt very modern. It felt like a very modern and contemporary concept and something that everybody can relate to, this unrequited love. Pivoting for a second, one, I mentioned something that I'm always trying to do is figure out what's another way we can write a Jewish song. What else can we do? How can we push the boundaries just a little bit, try something new, see what else is going on? And the reason that I started to do that is because I got tired of going into Hebrew school classrooms and having kids ask if we could sing real music today. I don't know if this ever happens to you when you, as a Hebrew school performer, you go into a classroom, they say, can we sing real music? And you say, yeah, of course. What do you mean by real music? And they say, well, not Jewish music, real music. And I think that there are people who see Jewish music as real music, and there are people who see barriers in that, whether it's songwriting style, whether it's language, whether it's text, whether it's genre. And I wanted to not replace Jewish songwriting, because little old me certainly cannot replace, you know, generations of songwriting, but to add another piece to the puzzle, almost, to say, well, how can we reach those kids that said that this wasn't real? Like, we already have the kids and the teenagers and the adults who said, yeah, I get it. This is real. I'm here. I'm with you. I'm locked in. I'm ready to go. But there are people who say, no, Jewish music is not real. I'm talking about like Ed Sheeran or Taylor Swift, right? Or Demi Lovato. And the question was, how can we get those kids to engage with Judaism the way that the rest of us do? So I took Yidid Nefesh. It felt like a great jumping off point because of these themes, these ideas that you hear in modern music all the time. Love, right? Longing, desire. And I wrote a song that is totally in English that sounds basically like a pop song, but woven into the text of the song, woven into the lyrics of the song is text pulled directly from Yidid Nefesh. And so essentially the song is a text study of this ancient piyut disguised as a modern R&B track, and wrote it intentionally with the purpose of bringing that to a population, saying, let's sing this song. Are you excited about it? Well, guess what? This is actually ancient text, and we're studying it right now. Just by singing it, you're engaging with Judaism in a way that maybe you never have before. And
it's amazing.
Yeah, really special, really great. You mentioned a little bit about how I thought about production. So I wrote this song intending for it to sound really modern and really different. Very few live instruments. I think the only live instrument that's on this track is an electric guitar that I played. So I wrote the chord progression to be very sparse and leave a lot of space. It's a finger picking. It's not like a big on strumming. It's gentle. It's laid back and allowed kind of these other effects to fill in the space in a way that felt very current. For that reason, because I was trying to pull out the modern, I guess, overtones of this ancient text, right? And say that these words are still relatable to us in 2019 or 2017 when I wrote the song. And, you know, would build on it from there. So went back to, well, can we use the vocoder in this track again? And you'll hear, I don't remember if it's exactly the vocoder or a different kind of effect on the turn after the chorus is, tell me where can I find you and would you mind if I tried to, has this kind of like cool vocal effect on it that hints back towards the vocoder on Harani, and just, you know, what are the ways that we can really pull out all of the modern juices of these words that were written hundreds and hundreds of years ago? And then create the resources for people to be able to lead those conversations themselves without me. I don't know if you want to talk about that now or after.
Let's talk about it just after we play the song for just a hot minute.
Yes.
Because I want to make sure we get to the song now. So everyone, this is going to be Hide and Seek by Jacob Spike Krause. And stay tuned after, you'll hear a little bit about where you can get resources on how to bring these to your religious school classes, to your teens, to your kids. This is Hide and Seek by Jacob Spike Krause.
We got a good thing, but I can't lie. Sometimes you're more of a curse than a blessing, 'cause you're too hard to find and I'm stuck second guessing on my own. Hurry up and show me where you've gone. Tell me, can I follow? 'Cause I've been waiting for so long. Your love to me, sweeter than the taste of honey, haunts all my dreams, but you're not there when I rise. You're
my heart's desire. See, when we're on, we're so on, the two of us stoking a fire. Cause you light up the world, and my heart is weak for you. I'll do anything you ask me to, just say you'll pull me closer. Cause it's almost time to lose my mind. Your love to me, sweeter than the taste of honey, haunts all my dreams, but you're not there when I rise. So take pity on this broken heart. How did we come to start this game of hide and seek? Well, come on, love, show yourself to me.
Welcome back, everyone, to JRR Artist Feature. I'm Charlie Kramer, and we're here with Jacob Spike Krause.
That's me.
That's Spike.
That was Hide and Seek by Spike, and it is a song based on Yedid Nefesh. We talked in the segment just before we played the song a little bit about a resource that you can get, because the song is actually all in English. You can go find this resource, and you can actually see the different points where Spike connected the English lyrics to the text and the translation of it. And Spike, tell us a little bit, just a short bit about where you can get that, and also like where and why would you use this?
Yeah, absolutely. So all resources for all my songs, sheet music, lyric sheets, the tracks themselves, you can find everything on my website, which is jacobspikekrause.com. This is a lyric sheet that basically has footnotes, and segments of the lyrics are bolded with footnotes, and you'll be able to see exactly which lines are pulled from text. And it's there are some lines that are tweaked a little bit and some that are essentially verbatim from the text, and then obviously original lyrics as well. So this is the kind of thing you would bring into a classroom or a workshop or a discussion to have, you know, the words of the song and the words of the prayer side by side, and maybe do an exploration about different versions of Yedid Nefesh, but also an exploration of the text itself, and that these words are very current and very relevant even today. So you can find all that stuff on my website.
It's amazing.
And good luck sharing it. I hope that it works out for you the way that it has for
and,
me.
Hey, bring Spike to your synagogue and let him share it with your synagogue himself too, you know?
Shameless
plug for my
that.
Friend
yes.
Spike. I think you guys should really consider bringing him out. Camp, some, you know, or synagogue.
If you've had a great time, you should bring, Charlie and I out together to do a live taping of a second podcast.
Or just bring us out together to sing with you. That'd be awesome. And
exclusively quick, what do you call them? Quick takes?
Hot takes. Oh, rapid fire.
Rapid fire. Exclusively rapid fire questions live podcast featuring Charles Kramer and Jacob Spike Krause.
I love that. That'd be awesome. We should do one if we're at camp with me this summer. We should do it. I just want to say thank
yes,
you, man.
Yes,
thank you for taking the time and sharing so much wisdom with us and sharing your music with us. It's been a blast. They can find your music
Absolutely.
Anywhere, right?
Thank you for having me. It's a treat to talk
oh,
to
it's
you.
Not-
yes, anywhere music is streamed or sold, Jacob Spike Krause, you can find it all. And I would love to hear what you think. So if you like something or you're uncomfortable with something, please reach out. Let me know. I love to get into those conversations with people.
Love it. All right. Well, Spike, it's been real. Thank you, everyone. This is JRR Artist Feature. My name is Charlie Kramer. That was Jacob Spike Krause. And we'll catch you next time. Send in love and lots of peace.